Maybe we should do a little rehearsing so we can get on the same. Or if you start playing the melody according to a scale or a key that you know, I can do that. I'll follow that in the future. Okay? I don't want to make you nervous. Just want to have it nice. Thank you. And he knows about the jukebox after class, putting everything on the jukebox. Yeah. Can you get my little glasses case, reading glasses? Okay. We'll make a little more headway, but we're not going to finish. Chapter 18. Sutta Goswami is speaking. This morning we heard. Are there persons that were not here this morning? Okay. This morning we heard Sutta Goswami responding to the sages of Naimisharanya, and the sages of Naimisharanya have just requested him to speak more. They gave some specific topics. The general idea is the topics about Krishna that you heard Shukadeva Goswami speak to Maharaj Pariksit. The topics about Krishna. They want Krishna. And you're qualified and we're real eager. That's the essence. So I explained this morning, we're getting once again in this process of Bhagavad Dharma, what qualifications do we have to have? First qualification is eagerness to hear. And a little bit of discrimination about who we hear from. Like persons like Sutta Goswami, here in disciplic succession. And they describe him as both learned and pure in devotion. Another qualification. So, Sutta, we heard this morning, said that actually, I don't have qualification, I have disqualification by birth. But the glory of this process is my disqualifications have been removed. Birth disqualification, like, you know, indelible, stamped for one's lifetime, removed by this descending process. All material obstacles are surpassed by the transcendental process of hearing and disciplic succession. And that is, birth is determined by one's past activities, karma. Karma is material, and this is fully spiritual. So you connect with this descending hearing process, and it elevates you beyond anything material. There's no material qualification necessary and no material disqualification. Even to be, what to speak of, get on the path, to become the representative of that path. And then he speaks about the subject matter is about ananta, the unlimited. So how can the limited speak about something unlimited? The answer is you can't, unless empowered by the unlimited. And because the unlimited is unlimited, unlimitedly the unlimited could do anything, like empower limited beings. Another one of the glories of the process of descending knowledge. Now he speaks, so the person, the process, and now the object. Krishna himself. I think it's worth going back just one verse, the last verse we covered, text 20. It is now ascertained that He, the personality of Godhead, is unlimited and no one is equal to Him. Consequently, no one can speak of Him adequately. And He elaborates. Great demigods cannot obtain the favor of the goddess of fortune, even by prayers, but this very goddess renders service unto the Lord. Although He is unwilling to have such service. And to explain the unwilling to have such service doesn't mean He's telling her to get away from here. He means that He doesn't require her assistance to do anything. We discussed He, for example, Lord Vishnu, although the goddess of fortune is at His feet and He could request her assistance, He, when it's time for the universal creation, He, from His own body, without the help of the goddess of fortune, He generates a lotus flower upon which is Lord Brahma is born. And then He empowers Lord Brahma to do the same. He doesn't require female companionship. He produces living entities just from His own body. He becomes empowered like Garba. So, goddess of fortune is serving the Supreme Lord. The demigods are seeking the favor of the goddess of fortune. And humans are seeking the favor of the demigods. And He's independent. So if He engages someone, it's just His mercy. And if He does so, it's by His independence. Because He's independent. Absolutely independent. And everyone else, and everything else, is absolutely dependent. So we're going to hear that theme spoken again. The position of devotional service is to acknowledge that fact and act in that consciousness. We're absolutely dependent upon the absolute independent. And the connection between us and the absolute independent is the medium of devotional service. So devotional service is very, very, very special, very powerful, very wonderful. And it's by that process of devotional service that He's going to glorify the Supreme Lord, which is what devotional service is. It's one of the Lord's glories. It's one of the Lord's internal manifestations of His internal potency, without which we're disconnected living entities. Or at least in terms of consciousness, thinking of ourselves falsely in that way. And hearing, just as, you know, we're hearing from Sutta, and Sutta who heard from Shukadeva, who heard from Vyas. By the hearing and the disciplic succession process, that's the connection. We're doing it. We're talking about it, but we're also doing it. Because the object is Krishna. Who can be worthy of the name Supreme Lord but the personality of Godhead? Sri Krishna. He's the object. Now He gives some evidence. Brahmaji collected the water emanating from the nails of His feet in order to award it to Lord Shiva as a worshipful welcome. This very water, the Ganges, is purifying the whole universe, including Lord Shiva. As He said in the previous verse, no one is equal to or greater than Him. While there may be great beings, top of the list of great beings, commonly understood, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Great beings. Prabhupada explains, generally, not always, but generally, Lord Brahma is a jiva soul. And Lord Shiva is in between. He has his own tattva. He's not a jiva soul, but he's not Vishnu Tattva either. He's Shiva Tattva, and he's a link or connecting personality to Lord Vishnu. But the living entities, ourselves, the topmost living entity, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva included, all are dependent upon the Supreme Independent. Even, as in the previous verse, even the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, and all-powerful demigods like Brahma and Shiva are engaged in the worship of Lord Vishnu or Krishna. Therefore, then this is, you know, he's like a lawyer building his case. Therefore, Your Honor, therefore, O best of judges, O sages, please consider who is more suited to be considered the personality of Godhead other than Krishna. Everyone is dependent upon Him. He is independent from everybody, and from Him everyone is deriving whatever it is that they have. And they're all worshipping Him. Those, even those who are worshipped, are worshipping Him. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Ji, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva are not independently powerful. They are powerful as expansions of the Supreme Lord. And all of them are engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. And so also are the living entities. And then he describes the four sampradayas. Sri Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya, Brahma Sampradaya, and the Kumara Sampradaya. All are very elevated, and they're all worshipping the Supreme Lord, teaching through their four distinct sampradayas the worship of the Supreme Lord. All of the four original sampradayas are still scrupulously engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord up to date, and they all declare that Lord Krishna Mukunda is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and no other personality is equal to Him or greater than Him. End of purport. Which is just restating what Sutta Goswami said. Your questions, the question you have put to me, please describe the activities of the Supreme Personality Godhead is a fitting description, a fitting question, because it's what all living entities should be doing, and elevated living entities are doing, and it's the best of all subject matters. And that connects to the next verse. Self-controlled persons. They're very rare, but there are some self-controlled persons who are attached to the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, can all of a sudden give up the world of material attachment, including the gross body and subtle mind, and go away to attain the highest perfection of the renounced order of life, by which non-violence and renunciation are consequential. And consequential is, the Sanskrit is swadharma, the consequential occupation. So, consequence, in other words, a byproduct. There's consciousness, and then there's characteristics of consciousness. And things like knowledge and renunciation, or here, nonviolence and renunciation, they're the consequence of consciousness. And what is that consciousness that brings the consequence of detachment and nonviolence? It's complete absorption in the personality of Godhead. Complete dedication. So, Prabhupada, in the purport, he takes these three words that are the operative words in the verse, and he explains the meaning of them. What is self-control? What is renunciation? What is nonviolence? self-control means, specifically the mind and senses, can be directed by the intelligence. And the intelligence directs the mind and senses to do what is, on the material side of life, do what is necessary to maintain the soul within this machine of the body. You eat what you require, you rest what you require, and not more, and not less. Just enough to maintain body and soul together, and that's the self-controlled person. So it's mind and senses are under the direction of the intelligence, which is serving the soul, who is serving the Supreme. Everything's, that's the self-controlled person. Everything is properly lined up. And the out-of-control person doesn't have things properly lined up. There's the interest, the self is considered to be the body, and so the senses indulge in things because that brings happiness to the body, which disturbs the mind and intelligence, and the soul is being carried along by the machine of the out-of-control mechanism. So the self-controlled then, Prabhupada explains in the purport that this is rare. We know from the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita there are different categories of renunciation. Who remembers those three categories? When Dhritarashtra is requested by Vidura, get out of here at once. So there's three stages of leaving behind the material circumstances. What are those three? Everybody's hand should be up. Chapter 13. You've heard it so many times. What's one of them? Huh? Dira. Parivajakacharya. Narottama. Or also Paramahamsa. So Prabhupada is using the term Paramahamsa. Narottama, that's what this verse is describing. We'll start at the top. Why not? Completely attached to the Supreme Lord. When one is completely attached to the Supreme Lord, as a byproduct, as a consequence, renunciation is there. And non-violence is there. Specifically, this non-violence, we'll cover that. We'll come back to the other two. Two stages of renunciation. Non-violence, Prabhupada explains, is where one is non-envious. Or the other way around. Envious nature produces aggression or violence to other living beings. According to Narada Muni, he's pretty good authority, right? According to Narada Muni, when one is proud, one can do all kinds of cruel things to other living beings. You know any proud people? Just, you know, walking around campus here and there? Even aside from off campus, just on campus. One or two, you know, maybe, persons who really think a lot of themselves. According to Narada, just in principle, when you receive something, and you don't acknowledge where that something has come from, it belongs to you. When you receive something and you acknowledge where it has come from, you know who it belongs to. It's not you. It's where that thing has come from. In the life of a devotee, they understand everything comes from Krishna. So this is an institute of higher education. And to get into this institute of higher education, that there's a whole lot of screens, a whole lot of qualifiers. So very easily, by material consideration, everyone who gets admission to this institute can it is open for the beast called pride. I'm better than everybody. I've got this capacity. And I'm competing with the other ones, and watch me, I'll beat them. Pride. Me, 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 me. And it's vicious, if you haven't noticed. I'm sure you have. With pride comes cruelty, or the capacity for acting like that. So, back to the Paramahansa position. We're getting instructions just so that you're aware of what's happening here. Sutta is giving Paradharma, just as the first verse of the Bhagavatam says, or the second chapter of the Bhagavatam says, the subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Paradharma, the supreme occupation of living being, how to become perfectly situated in your relationship with Krishna. And when you're perfectly situated, non-violence is a byproduct. You don't have to worry about pride, cruelty, and violence. It's not part of your repertoire. Because it's not part of the foundation upon which those things rest. If one factually connects to the personality of Godhead through this hearing process, with one stroke, all other things are done. Once Prabhupada described, very nice, because the sound effects are nice. He said there are two methods, the goldsmith method and the blacksmith method. This is in New York. He put his hand up in the air and like he was a goldsmith. The goldsmith method is you have a little hammer and a little piece of gold. Tap, 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 tap. Tap, 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 tap. Tap, tap, tap. That's the goldsmith method. And the blacksmith method is you put the iron rod into the fire, make it red hot, raise one big hammer, thud! Everything is finished. This is the blacksmith method. One thing, become attached to Krishna. And the whole circumstance of material madness just subsides. And the good qualities, like are mentioned here, the good qualities of non-violence, that's, in these days, Dalai Lama's a big guy. Because, you know, you can be spiritual and you don't have to surrender to God. You just be non-violent. And go ahead, Chinese, you can take over the country, and yes, that's fine, and be non-violent. Anyway, it's a very trendy thing these days. Valuing non-violence. In such a violent place, the world that we live in today. At least such a person is considered spiritual and shelter-giving person for spiritual people. Anyway, there's a whole other group of people that think themselves as spiritual, and their instrument to ensure that the other people become spiritual is violence. It's a crazy place. But in any case, the real, not the appearance of now you see it, now you don't kind of manifestation of nonviolence, but the real inner situation of not acting violently or not holding others in a position of envy and therefore taking aggressive acts to get from them what you want or to assert yourself above them in some animalistic way. To just be spiritually situated, where that quality of nonviolence automatically is there is this Paradharma situation, or the Bhagavat Dharma situation that comes from hearing about the personality of Godhead, and through that hearing becoming aware of Him and attracted to Him and attached to Him and ecstatically moved to serve Him and serving in great love. And the position of renunciation is not the material renunciation, give up this, give up that. I'll read two things that Prabhupada says about renunciation. Thanks to this little light here. Real renunciation means perfect dependence on God. Towards the bottom of the page. Perfect dependence on God. The fact of the matter is, we all are dependent upon God, as I mentioned earlier. He's the glorification of Krishna. He's the supreme independent. Humans approach the demigods for their favors. The demigods approach the goddess of fortune. The goddess of fortune is serving the supreme Lord, and He doesn't require anything from anybody. He's the supreme independent. We are all dependent. And to acknowledge heartily, happily, voluntarily, and to show our dependence, to accept that position of dependence, and to show that position of dependence through the medium of serving He who we're fully dependent upon, and glorify Him in that process, that's the position of devotional service. Renunciation means renouncing one's dependence on the conditions of material nature, which we are all dependent. Your ability as students, which you maybe not you, but the other students, right? Have some pride about ability of scholarship and academic capacity. All it takes is a little twist of the material energy, and it's gone. That gift, which has been given, in flash, it's gone. Who does it belong to? And if you recognize that as you're moving with that capacity, you should also recognize who it belongs to, with full dependence, and use in that consciousness. So this is easy to speak about, then it's a whole other thing to apply, because there's, you know, that's not what this university or this institute is about. They're not training this principle. Where is that? I'm just listening to Prabhupada on a morning walk in a conversation in Los Angeles. He's saying, great scientists, but they're thinking that life comes from the combination of chemicals. They do not even know about the soul apart from the body. And if they knew, where is that being in a fundamental way trained? They're scientists, so you're training in fundamental laws of nature. Where is that institute in the world that trains this and connects all forms of knowledge to that understanding? It doesn't exist. So therefore I declare nescience. Now, so for those of you that have some good fortune enough to understand that there is a soul and it is really important to live your life rather than living a lie, living the truth. And the real truth is life comes from life. Wherever there is some intricate machine, however complex and sophisticated that machine may be, it always takes an operator. Machines don't work without persons. The whole complexity of material creation, there's no operator, There's no intelligence behind all of that machine. Even just by logic, there must be some conscious being behind this very intricate thing. And whatever part we have to play in that, we're deriving our capacity to play that part from that supremely conscious being. Just by inductive processes. What to speak of by deductive or descending processes, where by hearing the messages of the personality of Godhead, that consciousness, the natural consciousness of the soul awakens. So, in the rush of the material energy taking us away from God through this intense machine of higher education, it takes a very thoughtful individual, indeed, a very strong-minded and capable of subtle discrimination persons to swim, to go against the current and actually be fixed in spiritual understanding. So congratulations for having that determination, courage, natural attraction. When Prabhupada describes this, the process of Brahma Jigyasa, a preliminary step is what I've just described, that an intuitive understanding, there must be something more than ignorance, than nescience. There must be something more. And there must be, based on that something more, there must be a way of life that's based on that something more. There must be a way of life where people live their lives, an actual understanding of the self, and the connection with the Supreme is clear, and the qualities that they carry are nice, not the other kind that we're so much accustomed to, the nasty kind. There must be. And when one it becomes convinced there must be, this material attraction is not a program I want to buy into. And so then this Brahma Jigyasa begins very strongly. And when that Brahma Jigyasa begins strongly, the opportunity for doing so comes through the medium of delivering these messages to the representative of Krishna. One inquires, Krishna sends the medium for that understanding. Representatives who give that message. That message is Krishna's message. The metaphor that Prabhupada uses is like somebody writes a letter and seals it, puts the postage stamp on, puts it in the government postal box, and the peon, the postal man, he picks up the letter, sorts it out, this place, that place, and then he delivers it to you. He delivers you the letter, but who's the letter from? The person who wrote the letter. The messages of transcendence are the messages of Godhead. And the deliverers are the postal peon. Although postal peon, the very name sounds like demeaning, but it's actually a very elevated position in spiritual life. Being the menial servant of Krishna is really, you get to deliver Krishna's message. All you have to do is don't mess up, don't edit it, don't change it, don't delete something, add something, just deliver it. And then the recipient of that message, because it's from Krishna, not because of the person, but because it's from Krishna, it acts to carry one against the current of the material energy into the spiritual energy. Where, as Sutta is speaking here, natural high qualifications result, such as renunciation. And what is that renunciation? It's not just giving things up, but specifically renouncing the misconception that our happiness is dependent upon the configuration of matter. Renunciation of the material conception of life. Which then means, if that's possible, as one hears the spiritual conception of life. Vishaya vinivartante niraharisha dehinam. If you just try to renounce objects of the senses, but in the mind there's a conception, I can enjoy through those objects, then you can't factually be detached from those objects you just gave up. In the mind there's still some lingering, I think I'm missing out on something. Prabhupada said when a devotee accepts sannyas, then they have a duty to do on behalf of the Supreme Lord. Their duty includes hearing from the scripture and attaching themselves to the Supreme, but as far as the service to society at large, they're to be kind and compassionate. And by giving knowledge to others, others will also benefit. So when such a person visits the home of a householder, if that person who is the renunciate looks in the house and sees, wow, nice furniture, nice family life, opulent living, maybe I'm missing out on something. If one is thinking like that, that's not a renunciate. So one should not take up the position of renunciation when there's still some hankering for material happiness. So how do you get on the other side of material happiness? This verse is explaining that. Through the hearing process, becoming attached to the Supreme and dedicating oneself to the Supreme, then automatically those higher grade qualifications, renunciation, and nonviolence, or relinquishing the enviousness or covetousness of what other people may have, it's gone. So now we'll go back to the Paribrajakacharya and the Dhira, or sannyas. The lower stage is, this is too much. I want out of here. I want to give up the situation because it's too much troublesome. And in that way, I want to become undisturbed by distancing myself from the causes of disturbances. So that's not so elevated. It's not as elevated as what's being described here. And the Bhagavatam is encouraging us, not just in the spirit of detachment, but in the spirit of attachment to the Supreme. Sutta goes on, O Rishi! O airplane! O Rishi! Who are as powerfully pure as the sun. Rishis, he's addressing the sages. I shall try to describe to you the transcendental pastimes of Vishnu as far as my knowledge is concerned. As the birds fly in the sky as far as their capacity allows, so do the learned devotees describe the Lord as far as their realization allows. So he's already described that the topics of the personality of Godhead are the reach of an ordinary being. And I'm lower than ordinary. But if there's some empowerment through this descending process, then to that extent, I can describe. Only by empowerment can one describe. This is another, we spoke about it this morning, but it's a very important It's a very important part of the humility, the true humility of a devotee of the Lord. Anything that's true has a spiritual foundation to it, or a spiritual basis, or spiritual conception. And the spiritual conception of a humble soul is any ability that I have to do anything, certainly spiritual things, but even material things. Any ability that I have is an ability that's given. So I can only function materially or spiritually according to the capacity that God has given. And especially with spiritual subjects, it requires, or any spiritual activity, it requires special empowerment, and I'll do what I can, you know, only whatever God empowers me. But whatever it is that He has given me, I want to use that fully in His service. And not otherwise. It's our understanding that God is unlimited. And so, this another way that's been stated several times already. So who can describe the unlimited? And we can't. At least we can't in fullness, because He's unlimited and we're limited. But through empowerment, whatever capacity we have to receive that empowerment, to that extent, the unlimited can be understood, and the unlimited can be glorified or spoken about. There's a related discussion to this one towards the end of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's chapter 87 of the 10th canto. I'll just outline it briefly. It's called Prayers by the Personified Vedas. And what do the personified Vedas do? They sing the praises of the Supreme Lord. That's what they do. In various ways, in various meters, and various features. They sing the praises of the Supreme Lord. So, after describing all of the 10th canto, plus all of the things that are preliminary glorifications of Krishna, Shukadeva Goswami has heard everything, and he's in this same category. Completely self-controlled, completely renounced, and completely non-violent. And he's very thoughtful. And in this moment of thoughtfulness, he asks, Maharaj Parikshit asks Shukadeva Goswami, I have a doubt. Could you please clear this doubt for me? The doubt is, everything that you've been describing, it's wonderful. And I've been experiencing wonderful transformations of consciousness. But my doubt is, the instruments that we've been using are material. I've been using my ear, which is material. And you've been using your tongue, which is material. So how can something materially utilized bring about a spiritual result? How can the unlimited personality of Godhead be glorified by something material and limited? So, Shukadeva Goswami says, very nice question. Such a nice question that this was asked long, it's a classic question. It goes through several generations of it was asked before, and they were discussing, and it's a nice question that was asked before. And he gets down to a discussion amongst the Kumaras. And they're very philosophically inclined. They were discussing from different points of view philosophically. And their conclusion was that while things can be considered material, the notion that they're material is because of their disconnection with the Supreme. But actually, all things, including material things, have a natural connection with the Supreme. And when connected with the Supreme, that thing takes on a spiritual quality. So the tongue can vibrate spiritual sounds, and the ear can hear spiritual sounds, and consciousness that's materially contaminated can become spiritually cleansed. And then they elaborate on that theme with mind-bending philosophical detail. But the essence of that discussion is everything has its connection with the Supreme. When used accordingly, spiritual potency is there. So similarly, this is very much connected to the Bhagavat Marg, the hearing and chanting processes of devotional service. Are not only instruments, but consciousness itself becomes again spiritually connected. And when spiritually connected, all kinds of realizations can come. Not that the unlimited can be unlimitedly known. Prabhupada has explained that even Krishna doesn't know his own limits. Krishna can assess all of his glories, and by the time he completes assessing all of his glories have expanded. Prabhupada explained like that. Even Krishna doesn't know what to speak of a tiny living entity. Know the limit. Ananta Shesh, you've heard so many times. With all of his thousands of mouths, he's glorifying the Supreme Lord and never reaches the limit of his glories. So he's unlimited. But to the extent that we've been empowered, one Suta Goswami has been empowered by the Supreme, one can then speak those glories. And the sages, although they themselves are as brilliant as and pure as the sun, they want more. They want to hear from Suta Goswami. So as a bird flies as high as its capacity permits, Sutta says, I also, according to the realizations given by the Supreme Lord, I will speak. So he's not going to speak a different message. He's just going to speak the message, but commensurate with the realizations that he's gotten. And I'll read one other verse. This just opens up up through verse 24. It's just getting ready for the topic of Maharaj Parikshit and his interaction with the sage Shamak Rishi and his behavior with Shamak Rishi, then the behavior of the son, Sringi, Maharaj Parikshit being cursed, then his calling for giving up his kingdom, accepting the curse, said all of that. So all of what we've heard so far is it's a very important understanding of the qualifications of the speaker, the qualifications of the listener, the glories of the process of hearing and glorifying, hearing and speaking about the personality of Godhead, the personality of Godhead himself, how he plays his part in this whole dynamic. So we're getting, you know, it's spiritual technology. And then the subject matter itself. Once upon a time. That's how it starts. Maharaj Parikshit, while engaged in hunting in the forest with bow and arrows, became extremely fatigued. Which is not like Maharaj Parikshit, because he's got control of his mind and senses. Extremely fatigued and thirsty. Hungry and thirsty. While following the stags. While searching for a reservoir of water, he entered the hermitage of the well-known Shamak Rishi and saw the sage sitting silently with eyes closed. Now, there's several things here. Maharaj Pariksit's, I mean, those of you that know this canto, he has, even before he was born, and when he was born, and throughout his life, his symptoms of Maharaj Pariksit are topmost symptoms. He's not like, you know, a sense gratifier gets a little thirsty and he gets overwhelmed. Gets a little hungry and he gets over, he can't, you know, he's gotta start rummaging around for something to eat. It's Maharaj Pariksit. So what the point is, this was induced. It's part of the plan of the Supreme Lord. That behavior uncharacteristic of such a personality was imposed upon him by a plan of the Lord. Overwhelmed with fatigue, thirst, and hunger. Then another uncharacteristic thing. He comes into a place where he sees the person, a Brahmin, a well-known, elevated Brahmin, sitting in samadhi. I mean, supposing you come in, just, you know, you're visiting someone's home. They're not in samadhi, but they're just sitting silently in a contemplative way. What do? You know, you close the door and quietly leave because you don't want to disturb them. Right? I mean, just a little bit socially aware person. This is the king. The perfectly controlled, pure devotee king. He's not just, you know, sitting watching television. He's in samadhi. Or talking on the telephone with his relatives. He's in samadhi. You don't disturb him. Right? I mean, just socially. A cultured person would... A little cultured person. A half-polite person wouldn't... But he did. Why did he? He's induced by the Supreme Lord. The whole... And then the next thing that... Because it will just fast forward... When he speaks to him and he doesn't acknowledge his presence, he becomes angry. That's not Maharaj Pariksit, becoming angry. Anger is, you know, it's not, he doesn't even know anger. He became angry. And then he became insulting. As he was leaving, there was a dead snake outside his hermitage, so he lifted up the dead snake on the tip of his sword and came back into the hermitage and draped it around his neck like a garland. You deserve a garland of a dead snake. Bah. That's not Maharaj Pariksit. So the Lord has a plan. Now, we're not Maharaj Pariksit either. So we may do things like that. And it's not because we're just, oh, Krishna's got a plan. He's inducing us to become insulting and to become angry and speak harsh words and do nasty things and become overwhelmed by our desires. Just Krishna's plan. But even through lesser persons, Krishna may act. Lesser than Maharaj Pariksit persons. I remember just one nice anecdotal example of this. There was a time in our ISKCON history when Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who was very, very expert and inspirational leader, for years he was in India, when in all of India, he was the GBC for all of India. He was like, you know, really controlling everybody and everything. And it was just, he got to a point where he wanted a break from India. I wanted a break from management. So he requested Prabhupada if he could go back to America and spend some time with his dear friend Vishnu John and just, you know, be more in a hearing and chanting the holy name kind of a mood. Prabhupada thanked him for all of the service and let him go. In association with Vishnu John, Vishnu John Maharaj's, his nature was just the opposite of Tamal Krishna Maharaj's. He just liked to chant. And he could chant all day long and worshipped his Radha-Damodar deities and just travel with a very small group of brahmacharis and just was a very affectionate person, a very soft, loving person. He just emanated those qualities. Very attractive person. So the two of them had a close friendship from the time before Tamal Krishna Maharaj had come to India. They were serving together in Los Angeles. So they had a very nice relationship with one another. So they spent time together. And in course of time, the two of them, you combined their resources in a very, using the word they use these days, synergistic way. The very, very charismatic and attractive Vishnu John would sing all day long, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj would sit with the people that were coming, serve prasadam, and preach to them, and get them to come along on the bus. And in a very short time, there were 5-6 buses, with bus leaders and book distribution parties, and they were stealing devotees from temples, and deliberately, and, you know, then scooting off into the sunset, and ha, 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 we got another man at our bus party. Those temples are no good. So there was friction between the presidents and Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So Prabhupada and he were speaking, and it was in the evening hour like this, and Prabhupada suggested some service. I forget what the service was. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, Prabhupada, why are you asking me to do that? You might as well just ask me to go to China. And Prabhupada sat up and said, Krishna has spoken. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, as soon as I said it, I thought, no, no, no. Because Prabhupada would pick, and Prabhupada picked up, and you should go to China. And he was being Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He was saying, no, Prabhupada. Instead of, yes, Prabhupada. China, you know, how can I... Krishna has spoken. He spoke through you. This is a wonderful idea. I've always wanted to... And then he went on and on about his desires to preach in China. And you have the qualification. You're an expert. You can do it. No one else can do it. Tamal Krishna Maharaj ki jai. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj realized he had to surrender because Prabhupada wanted him to do it. And he surrendered. And he did it very, very expertly at a time when, you know, it was risk your life to have anything to do with China, with religious organizations. And we can't speak too much about it even today, but there are a good number of Chinese books floating around China and a good number of Hare Krishna chanters chanting in China and initiated many, many initiated devotees. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj spearheaded that, and now he set up a structure for it to happen because he's very expert. He just put his brilliant intelligence and strong determination and expert organizing ability in place on the strength of Krishna spoke through him, and Prabhupada recognized it right away. So that's just a little anecdote that Krishna can speak through other persons. Krishna can engage others than pure devotees in as being instruments in his will. Someone that's less than a pure devotee, for example, can tap you on the shoulder when you're falling asleep during japa and say, excuse me, Prabhu, but something. This will, please be very attentive. This is the holy name. And if it's, you know, one could get angry at that person, one could also understand this is Krishna. And so forth and so on. So at least in this, the main message I want to share here is that with this incident with Maharaj Parikshit, one should properly understand the situation that it was the will of Krishna. Now why would Krishna want his pure devotee to do something that's unbecoming to a pure devotee? Normally that's not the case. Normally it's the other way around. Krishna wants glorification and great appreciation to go to his devotee. The short answer is that in this case, Krishna wanted Srimad Bhagavatam to manifest in the world. And he wanted it to manifest in a particular way, namely that Shukadeva Goswami would speak it, Maharaj Parikshit would hear it. The circumstance was orchestrated by Krishna directly. That's why it happened this way. And Maharaj Parikshit accepted it. This is the plan of the Lord. I've made a big offense. When it was a big offense, it was a big offense. Doesn't matter one's a king or emperor or in some way or another in the world a big man. You don't offend a sadhu. You don't offend a Brahmin. You don't offend a Vaishnav. Doesn't matter who you are. And whoever you are, you make that mistake and there's reaction. Doesn't matter. Like the whole situation with Grandfather Bhishma. Whoever you are, Mahajan, great, great personality. If you neglect the primary etiquettes of life, in Grandfather Bhishma's case, not protecting Draupadi, when he was on the side of the, you know, at least in the royal order of things, on the side of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. They were maintaining him. He was like the minister within that government. So he was in a position to do something, and he didn't do something. And so, finished. Prabhupada writes like that. Anyway, so, those are exceptional cases. Maharaj Parikshit and Grandfather Bhishma not behaving in standard ways. So what to speak of us? It's instructive for us. We should be very careful. Proper codes of conduct and well understood theistic standards we are to observe, whoever we may be. Not that I'm a devotee, I don't have to do those things. Or I'm a somebody rather, I don't have to do those things. We have to do. So let's see if I can see anybody's hand go up in the air in the dark. See if there's any questions, comments. Uh-huh, sitting right by the candle here, by the lamp. Go ahead.
Maharaj, you were saying that service is service to you have to realize dependency.
I said, what is dependency?
I wanted to ask more elaboration on this.
Well, state your question again. Can you restate your question, please?
Service, we have to realize our dependency on the Supreme Lord.
I'll read this section and see what I think you're asking about. There's two things that have to do with renunciation. And I'm in the wrong chapter. Text number 22. Two things. Real renunciation means perfect dependence on God. Below that, Prabhupada writes, renunciation means renouncing one's dependence on the conditions of material nature and thus becoming completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. You want an elaboration on that?
Well, you
went very fast through a critical part of your statement. Say it slower and clearer. Did you catch what he said?
You want me to try?
Yeah, help.
I got the sense of his question, but I didn't exactly understand what he wanted. He's asking, since in the name of depending on Krishna, one might, out of material consciousness, not take the initiative to do. Is that what he asked?
Wow, I never would have understood that if you didn't translate it. Is that just because you know him or you heard him say it?
I think it's the first.
Okay. Okay. This is an important, the clarification that you're asking is important to get it. Because dependence, like humility, is, in its true sense, is spiritual. Real dependence, real humility is spiritual. Real humility is to understand who you are as a spiritual entity, spiritual being, in relation to the Supreme Spiritual Being. It's who you are in your relationship with the Supreme. And dependence, similarly. Your very existence as a spirit soul is dependent. What to speak of the material things, the objects, you know, like your arms and legs, and your shoes, and your glasses, and your clothes, and, you know, your mental faculties, your intellectual abilities, your locomotive abilities, you know, just your breathing abilities, your heartbeat ability, you know, your existence, material existence, and any other further extensions of things are dependent. Completely dependent proof. It's all gone. We're completely dependent. That's a spiritual conception. Part of that, the natural thing that follows that spiritual conception is yet another natural extension of that spiritual conception is, therefore, our relationship is one of service. Where there's a relationship of service, you take initiative. You inquire, which takes initiative. You hear, which is the response from the Supreme Independent. And then you act. Takes initiative. You know, just take something that's really obvious and then something that's may take a little more discrimination as examples. So you hear the instruction, chant the holy name. Because Krishna's name is none different than him, and your spirit soul and your spiritual consciousness will be awakened by chanting the holy name. So that's the instruction and the reason why. You take some initiative. Chant the holy name. But, well, how can I do that? Because I'm dependent and I'm humble. Because you got an instruction. That's the link. That's the connection. Now, what about other things that... So, Prabhupada also said, read my books and distribute my books. There's an instruction. Then you take some initiative. You can read like this or like that. You can distribute his books like this or like that. But it's a principle. And then the detail, you can, to a certain extent you can inquire, but to a certain extent you use practical intelligence and self-examination and so forth. It's not like, okay, I just took a right step, and now can I take the left step? And then after that, can I take the right step again? In other words, one doesn't need instructions in all details of all things. That's rather crippling. It's not the spirit of being humble and being dependent. When you understand you have a... When that dependency is understood from with a, in principle, a spiritual conception, you take initiative because your constitutional position in that position of dependency is to serve. And so you do. There's not contradiction. It flows. Taking initiative flows from the sense of dependence and a spiritual conception of dependence and a spiritual conception of humility. The material conception of humility is you sit in a corner and you quiver and tremble and hope that somebody doesn't see you, because then you just fall to pieces because I'm so humble. I'm so independent, I can't do anything because I'm dependent. That's a material conception. Spiritual conception is dynamic. Initiative flows from that. Got it? You heard, you got it. Initiative. In spiritual conception, not independent. In spiritual conception. I had this discussion with one other devotee who Krishna Smarna knows very well, that I had this discussion with him. And he was like catatonic. He couldn't do anything unless he was told to do that something. Although he was told to do some things. In principle, you have to take initiative. I was explaining to him. And he started taking some initiatives and he started making some blunders. Right? Then he had learned, I have to be more careful when I take initiatives. But you can't be just catatonic either. You have to be careful. But, you know, it's okay. When a child is learning to walk, they may take a spill or two. It's okay. And now that devotee is maturing, and they understand more carefully how to take initiative. And my sense is you'll do a good job. Because right away you'll be careful. You just got an endorsement to take initiative. Okay, anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.